Hello and welcome to the KE Report. Chad and Corey here, getting an update from Triple Flag, traded on the TSX under the ticker TFPM, and on the NYSE under the same ticker TFPM. We are talking to CEO, director, and founder, Sean Usmar, and it's great to get you back on the show, Sean. It's been over a year. We were laughing that we need to get these updates a little more regular because a lot has happened with the company, but I'd love you just to give us a high-level snapshot of where things are at now as far as number of royalties, producing royalties. Just give us a nice overview of where Triple Flag is here in April of 2024.
Yeah, Chad, thanks. It's, as you say, time flies, and it's great to connect with you again. Hard to believe it was just over a year ago. And at that time, as you remember, we were just integrating Mavericks after the Mavericks transaction, which went really well. We got a great new team member in Warren, who's now general counsel. We delivered all the synergies on that. You know, pleasingly, we got some index inclusion and it boosted our liquidity on the back of that transaction, which is really helpful. But, you know, when you think about it, since we spoke, you know, we've just seen our seventh year of annual record ounce sales. So, you know, last year we did 105,000 gold equivalent ounces, which was the highest amongst the intermediates. I think we were one of only three companies between the intermediates and the seniors that actually hit our guidance last year. And we're the only company amongst the intermediates and the seniors that's actually guiding for growth this year, increased ounces with our existing portfolio. So we're guiding 105 to 115,000 ounces. And then for the 5 years beyond, with no more investment, that's an average of 140,000 ounces. So, you know, to have year-on-year consecutive growth, I think the operating cash flow alone from our first year of cash flow in 2017 through last year, that cumulative annual growth rate was 34%, which, you know, is obviously not a bad thing. We've grown our dividend again since we last spoke, another 5%, which is handy. And you can think at the moment, we've got of, you know, our total portfolio right now, you know, I think 234 assets, 32 produce those ounces I mentioned in that cash flow. The bulk of the growth is really coming from those assets, which are ramping in many cases or hitting gold-rich or silver-rich zones. And beyond that horizon, we've got a big basket of over 200 assets in the sort of development and exploration phase, which will represent some subset of those will generate more growth. Our cash run rate, you can think of on a trailing basis, before we've seen these, you know, increases in gold price and silver price, you know, it's been a trailing run rate of about $40 million US a quarter. And our dividend annually consumes just over $40 million. So it's super easy to service. You know, our net debt at the end of the last quarter was only about $40 million. So our balance sheet's pristine. You know, we've got nearly $700 million US of available firepower for more transactions. And the pipeline, I think, is the busiest we've seen in 8 years. So it's a really interesting environment for us to be, you know, out looking to deploy more capital to generate more growth. And just to remind, you know, your audience, you know, we're a precious metal streaming and royalty business that has 94-95% really represented through gold and silver. The rest is a bit of copper and nickel. We're in great locations, primarily Australia and the Americas, with about 80% concentration in those jurisdictions. And our asset diversification ranks with some of the best in the sector, but our cornerstone is in Australia and North Parks. That's about a quarter of our portfolio. And then nothing else is over 10%. So we're really nicely diversified. And I think the last thing is, you know, we're over and above that growth and that track record I mentioned, you know, sustainability wise, we're capital providers to the mining sector. So, you know, we like to try and help where we can with license to operate, community spend, scholarship programs for the mining sector with our partners. And that's been recognized, I think, with Sustainalytics. And even though we were fourth in the world a year ago when we spoke, we're now ranked third, which we're pleased to see. And, you know, the team continues to sort of deliver. So it's been a good year. And I think the outlook is looking really good right now.
John, what is the strategy to help providing capital to the underlying sector in the sense that you said, look, royalty companies, especially recently, have been looked upon by explorers, developers as a source of capital because capital has been tight. the company has over $660 million in available liquidity. And you said right around $40 million in debt. So how do you go and what opportunities do you see in the market to continue on simply that growth front of bringing in more royalties and streams?
Yeah, it's a really important question. And, you know, I suppose the way we looked at it in 2016 when we started this company is that the mining sector, you know, you don't want to bet against the trends. And I think the trends were pretty clear that you've got a sector that is taking longer to bring new mines on. I think the average time now from discovery to bringing a mine on is not far off 20 years. A lot of it through permitting and just the difficulties of delivering new mine production. I think only one in five mines are coming in roughly on time and on budget. And that's been made harder with the inflationary and supply chain challenges we saw with and post COVID. So yeah, for us, we said, if you've got a sector that is focused on, you know, large capital deployment and the traditional debt and equity markets increasingly are dominated by passive trade and are less helpful for risk capital in the sector, there's really an opportunity. And if you can apply the streaming and royalty business model to really bring patient, sophisticated capital to the sector, that can be a really good risk-reward alternative for miners and also for our investors. So that's what we set out to do. I mean, you've seen the growth I just shared with you. So I think, you know, it's not just our opinion. I think we're seeing it in real time. And when I look at the environment now, we said when we started that we wanted to compete with the biggest, more rational end where the barriers to entry are higher. So really the Wheaton, Francos, and Royals. And that meant typically checks of in the middle of the sweet spot, say 1 to 500 million US in size. We've clearly done smaller, but a lot of our effort was focused in that zone. And the biggest in the space was North Park's at 550 million that we did a few years ago now. I think that lens is the same today as it was. So with 234 assets, 32 producing, you know, we will deploy money in smaller situations if they're exceptional. But right now, I'm looking to see if we can deploy, as we've always prioritized, in things that are producing with either good expansion or mine life extension potential. So there we're talking about miners looking to acquire new businesses or build new mines, perhaps unlock value in things that are non-core. And I don't need to go into it, but you know there's a bunch of that kind of stuff in the market, majors looking to divest and so on. So I think the things that we're active on now in the hundreds of millions of dollars in size, actionable things where miners have an absolute use of proceeds and perhaps we're part of fixing their balance sheet, improving their liquidity profile, or strategically adding to their growth outlook, is the most robust it's been in our 8-year history. So we look, you know, we see a lot of that. There's always mine development stuff, but I mentioned the odds earlier. So there's only so much capital at any one time you really want to deploy from a portfolio management point of view. So, you know, we continue to be, I'd say, very discerning on that. And there we share the risk. So like we, you know, that's the beauty of this form of funding. It doesn't have the repayment obligations that you have with, you know, senior secured or high yield debt. It's very cost competitive. But if the miner doesn't deliver, we suffer with them. And so, you know, doing our homework and our due diligence and sharing that risk is a large part of the value proposition, but also, you know, the reason we have to do our homework super carefully.
Well, Sean, let's dig into that concept a little bit more, because you have deployed capital into some assets where you have good operational partners, and a lot of these are long life generational assets. You mentioned your cornerstone asset at the North Parks where you have the gold and silver stream. I'd love you to unpack that and just maybe one or two of the other high impact royalties that the companies has with quality operators and long life assets.
Yeah. So, you know, I think North Parks, for those of your audience who aren't as familiar with it, you know, it's a copper mine. I haven't met a copper bear yet. You know, copper's obviously got pretty strong fundamentals. I think the supply side continues to, unfortunately, under-deliver. And the demand side looks robust on pretty much every projection I've seen. I think, however you feel about the energy transition, you know, copper is sort of foundational to a lot of these things. So if you've got a copper mine that's been operating for 35 years, originally owned by North and Rio Tinto, we invested when China Moly was operating it, and now Evolution with Jake and his team have taken that on. And they've got a great track record of unlocking value in Australia on mines like this. They own Cal, which is just down the road. They have Ernest Henry, both assets of which at Barrick and then at Xstrata had some history with prior to their ownership. And so having them operate there on an asset that has more than 500 million tons of resource at reserve grade, and all those resources and reserves are really on 26 square kilometers, they're only mining at 7.6 million tons per annum. And our stream covers more than 1,000 square kilometers on very prospective land. So it's just a beautiful, you know, very long life asset where, you know, we think there's great potential in the future for expansion and certainly for many years ahead of mine life. And to put that in context, even though it's a copper mine, we stream gold and silver. When they had back in 2000, about 1 million ounces of reserves in gold, over the next 20 years, they took out 1.1 million ounces of gold, and they've got just under 1 million ounces of gold in reserve now. So it's the sort of mine life that, as a guy who's interested in gold and silver, it's just a beautiful thing to have in the portfolio for our investors. And they are just entering now. We announced this late last year, two shallow open pits, which are really nice in gold grade. It's a multi-ore source mine. And this is, think of it as 5 or 6 times the run of mine grade over the last year. So you would have seen, we just put out our GEO results for this last quarter last week. That's a new quarterly record for us, just under 28,000 gold equivalent ounces, which is really nice to see. And a large part of that was a nearly 90% growth on the prior quarter in gold coming out of that mine for us. So just a beautiful asset with an operator who's just, I think, got so much potential to unlock more value there. So we're really excited about that. Yeah, so that's North Parks in a nutshell. You know, a lot of the cornerstone assets we discussed previously, things like our first asset, Cerro Lindo, you know, we stream silver as a byproduct there. But, you know, it's a copper lead zinc mine, VMS style deposits where, you know, we've already recouped our original investment and they just keep adding mine life. And it's the exact sort of thing that you look for in investments like that. And similar with Buriticá, some of your audience will remember Continental Gold, you know, another asset where we have more than recouped our original capital. And they're only just beginning. It's multi-million ounces of reserve. It's a massive, more than 1,000 square kilometer land package. But, you know, they continue to add reserves and resources. They've added capacity. They're about 30% over what we underwrote. And, you know, the analyst NAV of the mine is more than our investment, and we've already recouped the investment. So it's that sort of thing that really makes this model, I think, very appealing for investors, while providing the sort of risk capital that we did on a growth asset like, you know, Buriticá back in the day and many others.
Yeah, no, North Parks, boy, oh boy, that growth has been very impressive. Let's talk about some of the near-term development projects. Slide 15 in your current presentation outlines a handful of projects here. Development timelines 2025 to 2030, and then 2030 and beyond. These offer that internal organic growth for the company. Take us through any of these assets, many of which I'm sure our listeners know, that could be coming online in the next 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, I think an important thing maybe to provide an overview as you think about this, though, is going back to that slide 13 with, you know, our track record of growth. I think it is important for any investor to not just consider what a management team is saying about their future projections, but also think about their history of actually delivering. And you've seen our growth delivery over time here. As I said, we're the only issuer in the space currently that is projecting growth from our existing portfolio this year. And then when you look at that growth beyond, I think it's important to think that the bulk of that growth is actually coming from assets like North Parks. And why that matters is, if I said to you that, you know, a lot of that growth was contingent on permitting, funding a new mine into production, and that is a riskier prospect than an operating team with a license to operate that's been doing something for 35 years and just really good at it and continuing to do the same. So when you think about that 140,000 plus ounces a year, that's coming from mines like that, like the Impala Bafokeng Styldrift mine ramping up to nameplate. They're 70-80% at this stage and they're ramping up. You know, it's mines like Beta Hunt and others that have just been doing great. Camino Rojo that's been, you know, really hitting it out the park. So I think it's important when you think about growth to think about risk. And that 140,000 plus is really driven through that. So if you go to those handful of projects we have put on slide 15, you know, none of these really are big drivers of the growth that we've projected there. You know, you'll see Hope Bay, obviously, in great hands now with Agnico, and you know, we've got a nice NSR in that. And you know, there's discussions out there of that being, say, 400,000 ounces a year. They're doing a lot of work on that, and we look forward to seeing you know, what Agnico does in order to continue to make that case, which, you know, I think there's still a bit of time there. But it's the right operator with a great ore body. But again, you know, it's not something any single one of these that is necessary for us to deliver that. And we're really happy to have that in the portfolio. You know, Eskay Creek, we've got a small royalty on that. Same thing, that's been delivering nicely. And Kone from Montage Gold, you know, they've just got a new CEO who I think has a great team around him. And we're very excited to see. And that's a very large ore body. And I think the sort of timeframes here where we have this sort of 2% NSR would be a really helpful addition. Tamarack, I think we had spoken of previously, you know, they've been getting Department of Defense and Department of Energy financing, as well as they've got that Tesla funding. And they put out some results recently on not just good exploration results, but also some good positive catalysts on permitting. We got a nice royalty on that. And I think within this time frame, more towards the back end, there's a good chance we'll see that come in. And then there's many others below that, from Queensway to Polo Sur and that, which is sort of growth beyond this, which we just try to highlight here. There's, as you'd imagine, if you've got over 200 of these things, these are not things that the market or investors are typically paying attention to. But I'll give you an example. Just in this last quarter, you know, you would have seen that Kensington, we settled with Coeur. We had a royalty on there and a bit of a dispute that was settled. That contributed nearly 3,000 ounces in this last quarter, a lot of that being sort of a catch-up settlement on royalty entitlements. But it's the sort of thing that, candidly, nobody is paying attention to. And I think it just highlights exactly my point, where if the core of the portfolio, like North Parks and that, is helping contribute to lower-risk growth, the portfolio has delivered and I think is continuing to deliver. But then you've got these sort of silent contributors that are not massive in any one right, but I think as a collective over time represents some really interesting growth. And that's before you consider that we built this company through deals and that we got a lot of firepower, and it's a pretty good deal environment to continue doing so.
Well, Sean, just piggybacking off that point you're making about some of these maybe not being as daylighted as far as major contributors, but collectively these all add to growth and potentiality. I think one of the big pluses for the royalty business model overall is that you could have an operator, a stronger operator, come in and take over a mine, and you've got a one up there, and that they have bigger capital, maybe more money to explore. You can have producing assets that keep finding more and more ounces or pounds in the ground. And so while there's a known entity at the beginning when you buy the royalty, all that growth is just gravy. It's just upside icing on the cake for the royalty company. And then you have the whole portfolio of all the exploration and development assets that really aren't getting a lot of valuation when analysts run it. But over time, they're going to feed the valuation. So maybe just speak to the diversified opportunities in a royalty company and how overall it's such an attractive business model.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up actually beautifully. I think it's in slide 9 in our deck. You would have seen there the asset diversification piece that we've highlighted. And I think it's a point in some ways, it's almost like an ETF or a tracker, except paying a dividend with a large amount of cash flow that's super diversified, that you couldn't readily replicate in an operating business because the span of control and complexity would just be too much. These are passive portfolios where you still actively manage sort of the core relationships that matter. Last year alone, for example, we visited about 70% of the ounces contributing to our growth and to our cash flow last year. But that flywheel, it's about 70, or just over 70% of our NAV is captured in those 32 producing assets. So that flywheel of cash flow not only allows us to pay a really good dividend, but it allows us to be able to continue to invest in future growth. And to your point, the thing that makes this model work so well, the sector focuses very often on, you know, what's drilled extensively and what you can see. But I just mentioned the example with North Parks on the gold ounces, where, you know, they've already over the 20 years of the turn of the millennium taken out more gold than they had in reserve. It's a sort of asset where, you know, 20 years from now, if we're having a chat, heaven help us, you know, at that point, there's a good chance we've just harvested 20 odd years of, you know, really strong cash flow from gold and silver. And they're looking at a very similar visible mine life with an asset like that and a mineral endowment like that, and perhaps expand it. Like when we bought the stream, they were operating at 6.4 million tons per annum. They're now 7.6 million tons per annum. We've seen, as I said, a 30% increase over and above what we underwrote in Buritica, for example. Our investors get to participate in that sort of thing. And of course, we do carry risk as part of that portfolio, but that portfolio allows us to diversify that risk and make sort of sensible choices with higher risk, higher return opportunities, with sort of steadier, good life replacement, good expansion potential optionality in the portfolio. And that's, I think, what's delivered our growth so far. And it's how we've chosen to compete. We don't buy like a big bucket of stuff that might come in 20 years from now or never. We've got a lot of that, but it's important to have cash flow and growth, as well as longer data growth, to cover the three horizons for investors.
On that topic of diversification, I know I asked you about growth strategy opportunities that you're seeing. This company, it's very much precious metals focused, 74% gold, 20% silver. Do you think the company might start diversifying a little bit more into base metals, critical minerals, anything else, almost like what we've seen from some of the major miners?
Yeah, so it's a question you'd be unsurprised to hear. We do get a fair bit. The best way I can answer that is we've always had base metals and critical minerals as part of our sweet spot, where we won't go overweight. So we've said as a growing company, that's 20, maybe 30%, where you then grow preferentially in precious for a while, similar to what Franco's done in oil and gas, which we don't do. I spent more of my career in companies like Beatrice Billiton, Xstrata, and then nickel and, you know, base metal businesses than even in precious. And if you look at our ounces, 70% or so come from base metal mines that have precious metal byproducts, where we offer a competitive cost of funding and we get this great mineral entitlement. So I still think that is the highest and best use of our capital, where we can help support energy transition, base metal, PGM, those sorts of businesses, while staying very much on strategy as a sort of precious metals focused business. But if we occasionally find something that isn't polymetallic, or where there is an opportunity to take some, you know, nickel, copper, commodity exposure like that, clearly we'll do it. I think the one challenge we found with some of these metals is when they are more niche and they're a lot more volatile, it's really at times quite perilous to put a pin in the board to say, oh, I'm underwriting $32 cobalt. Like, I can't do that. I don't know how you do that. So, you know, cobalt has been at times super volatile. We've seen that with lithium. I mean, lithium was down, what, over 75% or something last year. So we like to try and see if, with hindsight, we've hopefully done more countercyclical investment, particularly on those sorts of commodities. And I think that's part of the reason you'll see we find ample opportunity in precious. We'll stay alive to the possibilities on base and critical minerals.
All right, Sean, we'll wrap it up there, but we'll be keeping an eye on any big future transactions the company makes, keeping the main thing with precious metals, but open to the idea of some critical minerals deals if they present themselves. It's really a fascinating company, and it's moved up the batting order as far as size, scale, and gold equivalent ounces on the royalty scene. If people want to follow along with the news at Triple Flag, definitely click on the link below this interview. It takes you over to the company website to their news section. And Sean, as always, looking forward to our next conversation.
Chad, thanks. Thanks to you, Corey. It's great chatting to you again.